I always find that fiction is a place where one can go to talk about or to discuss issues that you can't really talk about in polite society. It's not really something that people speak out of the open. Maybe they do now, you know, now we are speaking a lot about immigration and about identity and things like that. But at the time when I was starting to write in the 90s, it wasn't really much talked about.
This is My African Reading List, a podcast from the House of Literature, where invited guests present their recommendations and must-reads from the African continent and diaspora.
My name is Leila Abulaila. I'm a writer. I've written six novels and two collections of short stories. I grew up in Khartoum, Sudan. And I moved to Scotland in my mid-20s, and I'm still living there in Aberdeen.
Thank you. You said that you've written several books, and both novels and short stories, but what do you like to read?
I've always loved to read fiction. I grew up, always having a book going, a novel going. And the first books that I read were influenced by availability in Sudan and Khartoum. Not many books were available, so you had to kind of read what you find. And this ranged from the classics to very silly books like Mills and Boone and you know, what we call pulp fiction. So I kind of read very, very widely when I was growing up. Yeah.
But is the novel your favorite genre?
The novel and short stories. I particularly like long short stories. I like short stories that are around 8,000 words, you know, 6,000 to 8,000 words. I find them satisfying, because sometimes the very short story, short story, like 2,000 words, can be too short. And having a kind of a very generous short story is very satisfying. Yeah.
So that you get to get a little closer to the characters or to the plot.
Yeah, maybe. You kind of get closer to the characters and to the plot, and you live with them for a considerable length of time. Yeah, so that is nice. Yeah, but of course the novel is the supreme.
Yeah. You've written short stories yourself, as you said. You published the short story collections Colored Lights and Elsewhere Home. And of course, a number of novels, and you've written several radio plays. What's your favorite genre to write in?
I like writing short stories. I find them enjoyable. But also the novel is nice, because when you're writing a novel, you have a home for almost like 3 years or something. So you're settled in one place, which is the novel, and you can work on it. You can stay inside it, even as you write the first draft and then write the second draft. With the short story, it's almost like a holiday let or something. you have to get out after a short period of time. You're only there for a few weeks or a few months, whereas the novel, you have an extended stay.
So where are you currently staying, in a holiday let or at home in a novel?
I'm worse than a holiday let. I'm from hotel to hotel, because I've been doing a lot of promotion for River Spirit, and I've been on tour, so I haven't had the time to focus on anything that is long or steady yet.
But are you able to read while you're on tour?
Oh, yeah, I love reading, and aeroplanes. I carry with me a Kindle. I'm one of those people who is happy with the Kindle.
So am I.
You are? Oh, that's good. Because I find the light thing helps. Of course, I don't have to carry heavy weight when I'm traveling. And the other thing also is, when I forget a character, I can search for them inside the book. So then I remember, oh, that's so-and-so, that's so-and-so, that's so-and-so. So it helps me with the reading. Yeah.
That's true. That's a good point. So what was your latest great read? Or what are you currently reading?
Well, I'm reading The Shadow King by Maza Mengistu because we're having an event together. So I've been reading her novel. Yeah.
What do you think so far?
Well, it's very interesting because we are both, interested in Africa, in war, and in this idea of women, bringing the lives of women who are usually they're in the footnotes of history. They're not really mentioned, and yet they played an important part within this historical time. So it's we both share that interest in our books, but our styles are very very different, and it shows how you can approach the same. Well, not the same, but you can approach subjects in a very different ways. Yeah.
Yeah. And this novel, as you mentioned, your latest, River Spirit, is historical, and you've written both historical and contemporary fiction. But in both of these, much of your writing is centered around Sudanese and Muslim history. So where does that engagement come from? What is it about fiction that works so well to explore history, you think?
Well, I when I first moved from Sudan to Scotland, I felt very homesick, and I had a lot of anxieties about the move and about bringing my children up away from home. And I found that people didn't really speak about these things, and I found that fiction was a good way, a place where I could explore these themes. And I always find that fiction is a place where one can go to talk about or to discuss issues that polite you can't really talk about in polite society. It's not really something that people speak out of the open. Maybe they do now. Now we are speaking a lot about immigration and about identity and things like that. But at the time when I was starting to write in the 90s. It wasn't really much talked about. So I do still see fiction as a place that we can go to discuss things that are difficult to discuss in day-to-day life.
Yeah, because another central theme that I see in your work is the idea of home. As you said, this idea of losing home while going to Scotland maybe was a catalyst in many ways.
Yes, in many ways, because I hadn't really thought of myself as a writer in Sudan. I wanted to study statistics. That was my aim, and to teach in university. So it was actually the move that made me write, and so. It brought out all of these, themes in that I wanted to discuss. Yeah,
I think it's very interesting that you study statistics, because I think there's this maybe cliche about writers being bad with numbers.
Yeah, there is a cliche about being bad with numbers, but statistics is not really all about numbers.
That's true.
We did a lot of modeling as well. And sometimes that I find that helpful when I'm thinking of the novel as a model, because a novel is not real life. Real life is too random. It's too you can't just put real life, record real life, and say this is a novel. You need to give it a shape, and that's what statistics does to a large extent is you're shaping raw data into a particular sort of curve, and you're finding whether this curve best fits the data that you have, and you're making extrapolations, you're making predictions, and in a way, fiction does work like that. Yeah.
So you can actually use your statistics training in your fiction writing.
I think I do use it sort of subconsciously, but I haven't used it sort of. Deliberately, but I might.
But is that part of a pleasure for you when writing to make the model of the novel or the skeleton or?
Yes, yeah. It's very enjoyable. That's part of the enjoyment, and the enjoyment is being with the characters, spending time with the characters, being in a place, a different place, being in a different time. For the writer, I guess the reader would feel that way when they're reading the novel, but the writer feels it more intensely because it's even a slower process for us.
Yeah.
So, you know, a reader could read a novel in a week, but we've spent a long time writing and imagining. So for us, it's a lot of time spent there in that place.
Yeah. This book just now about how you find fiction a place to explore things that aren't necessarily easy to talk about. And as a writer with a background from North Africa, as a Muslim writer, often writing about Muslim characters, you are often considered, in quotation marks, political for what you write. Although you yourself have stated that writing for you is something deeply personal. Do you think that such categorization affects your writing? What do you choose to write about or not, you think?
I always choose to write about what fascinates me. And so that is a very personal thing. Of course, I'm affected by what happens around me, what I hear going on, the new ideas that are coming. This all, of course, I'm influenced by that because I live in the world like everybody else. But I can't predict what I'm going to be fascinated about, what is going to interest me. And sometimes things interest me, but then they frizzle out. The idea frizzles out. So especially with a novel, embarking on a novel, I need to have something that is really going to, the interest will be sustained day in, day out, in a kind of a long term. I don't feel I'm an activist. I don't feel that I'm particularly drawn to being political. But it just, I can't help it by being who I am,
yeah.
And writing about these particular issues that affect me personally. But then other people might see it as political, and I understand that because I feel that the big political challenge of our times is the movement towards Europe, is the movements towards the West. So you have a lot of Africans, a lot of Asians coming into Western countries and bringing with them things. These things are religion, these things are culture, language. And so I feel that is the exciting theme of our lives now. Are we going to, how are we going to deal with this? Those of us who are coming in, those of us who are here already, the children who are growing up and who the children also interest me because they didn't make the decision to move.
Yeah.
It was forced on them, you know, and so they grow up burdened with expectations. All of these issues are the politics of the moment, and politicians come in, you know, they weigh in all of these things, and so it becomes a political issue.
Yeah. And you also write about, I would say, almost the flip side of that in your historical fiction. You write about the movement from the West. In River Spirit, for instance, in a very different sense, of course, with the British and the Scots coming into the Sudan, bringing their customs, they're enforcing them maybe in a much harsher sense on those staying there.
Yeah, I understand it better now after I've moved, after I've lived now in Britain for so many years. I've lived in Scotland. I have a better understanding of the ordinary people who were part of the empire, of the only ordinary young, let's say the young Scottish man who decides to join the army or decides to take a job in the colonies. A lot of these young men, you know, they came from working class backgrounds. They faced a lot of prejudice, a lot of restrictions within life in the UK. And going to the colonies was a way, an outlet for them. To go and prove themselves, you know, to make their fortune, to represented an open space where they could go and prove themselves. So and of course for other people it represented adventure and so I have a better understanding of that but unfortunately none of them, well, very few of them saw these places as already having people living there. Yeah. You know, in their mind, it was empty spaces that provided, you know, opportunities for them to explore and then exploit. Yeah,
yeah, a blank slate for them to
yes,
their mark on.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
You also worked with the aspiring writers and to mentor other underrepresented writers, for instance, through the Breakthrough Writers Program. What is needed, do you think, to achieve more diversity among writers and for minority writers not to be boxed in, to be free to write what they want? A big question.
Well, I think I think the situation is a lot better now. There are more and more writers, you know, from minority backgrounds. They are writing, they are being published, they are being represented. I think that they are writing. I think the challenge is to sustain a readership so that it's not just a fashionable thing. So we saw, for example, during the Black Lives Matters, there was a lot. Publishers were very open to Black writers being published, and they were marketed. But then, is that going to continue?
Yeah.
Is that going to be sustainable? So I think that the challenge is to increase the readership. You know, to reach out to not just the ordinary reader, who can be middle class and white, but also to go into the communities and say to them that these books that are being published are also for you. They are about you, and to get them to read these books. And I think that is the challenge.
Mm.
Because without a readership, you can't sustain a culture of writing. You know, of having writers, and you also don't want the minority writers to be writing for a predominantly white middle-class readership only. You want them to feel that they are writing for their own communities as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm. Do you see that as a challenge, that you can also be sort of expected to write certain things to appease a white middle-class readership?
No, I don't. I really believe that writers write about what fascinates them and what they want to write about. I don't think that there is a. I think it's maybe there's we overestimate the pressure that goes into the writing. I think that the challenges are more after the books are written. In the field of marketing, in the field of presenting the book, even the way the blurbs are written, perhaps the way the covers are designed,
yeah.
That is where the issues lie. But within the text itself, most writers have a sense of integrity, and most of them do write what they believe in.
Yeah. Well, we're here to talk about some of your favorite writers, or some of the writers that you want to highlight for our listeners for my African reading lists. So, what writers or books have you brought to share with us?
Of course, the giant of Sudanese literature, Tayyip Saleh, and he's written the classic Season of Migration to the North, which is a wonderful book, very rich, very amazing. It's been described as a Heart of Darkness in reverse. It's been described as one of the best Arabic novels of all time. So this is really a must read you know, all students of African literature and people interested in African literature will find it wonderful to read. It's also extremely readable. It reads like a thriller. You're always turning the pages.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So it's not a difficult read at all. But I personally love his earlier work, the novella, The Wedding of Zayn. And that one is a much quieter work. It's a small novella, and it doesn't have the big political themes of the West and the the East and West theme and the colonialism. It tells the story of the village idiot, as they would say, and it's all set in a particular Sudanese village. So you get village life, you get this really kind of sweet, charming story about this young man who keeps falling in love with one girl after the other. And every time he falls in love with a girl, he starts to sing her praises. And so people hear about her and she immediately gets married because he's kind of like publicized how wonderful she is. And so the mothers start to want him to fall in love with their daughters so that the daughters get good marriages. At the same time, there's a dark side to it and how much he's treated so badly. He's very much the outsider. But then a wandering preacher, Sufi, sheikh, mystic, tells him, you're going to marry the most beautiful girl in the village. So there's this prophecy that he hears. So it's a beautiful, novel, which has, for me, it's very Sudanese. It's got the qualities of Sudan, the kind of the mysticism, the family life, the community life. It's a lovely read.
Hmm. Do you remember when you first read Saleh?
Well, I read him then in Sudan, I read him in Arabic, and then I read him again in English. And this Wedding of Zayn, I used to carry it with me on the bus in London as a student. So whenever I was homesick, I used to read it on the bus. Yeah, because that was, for me, the novel that represented home, even though I didn't come from a village. But Tayyip Saleh kind of captures something, quintessential about the Sudanese character.
Mm. It's beautiful. To have this favorite book that you,
yes,
like a talisman that you can take up. Any other writers that you want to mention? I know you also have a close relationship to the writing of the Egyptian Nobel laureate Naguib Mahfouz.
Yes, well, my mother is Egyptian, so we used to spend the holidays in Egypt, and I'm very much was. Brought up in an Egyptian culture. And Naguib Mahfouz is a very Egyptian writer. He himself kind of never left Egypt, and he was very tied to Egypt. So he doesn't do the travel. He doesn't do the East-West. It's very embedded in Egyptian society. And his trilogy...
Cairo trilogy.
Yeah. Palace Walk, Palace of Desire, Sugar Street. This one is very much a wonderful way of learning about the history of Egypt, but also about this family. He goes deep inside the household and tells us about the different characters, the mother, the father. It's very, very nice. My favorite is the second part of the trilogy, Palace of Desire, and it's about this unrequited love story, this young man who comes from a humble lower middle class family, falls in love with this very posh girl. And it's beautiful passages, the way they meet and how he's so tongue-tied and how he can't speak. It's really, really, really beautiful, that. And Naguib Mahfouz also, the Cairo trilogy is sort of big, fat books that you really need, lots of time to read. But he then, later on in the 60s, he wrote very short novels. And one of them I really like is called The Thief and the Dogs. So that's also a thriller about a man who, it starts off with this man who's coming out of prison, determined to take revenge on the people who put him into prison. So again, it's a bit like Season of Migration, where it's got this very thrilling element, easy to read. But again, it takes you very much deep into, the Cairo streets and the ghettos and Egypt at that time and the politics of the time.
Yeah.
So that is nice.
I noticed how you mentioned two two sort of thriller-like novels that you really admire. Do you think that you, is that something that you've been inspired by in your own writing?
Well, I like it. I like it when people say to me that they are, you know, excited that they're turning the pages and all that. I feel that that is part of the pleasure of reading, that I like writing which is where the topic is serious, but the style is easy and accessible. That for me, this combination is kind of a winner for me.
Yeah, and I think I recognize that combination in your writing as well.
I'm glad. I'm very happy. Yes.
Yeah. How you, especially in River Spirit, with all the different perspectives, you feel like you get to the sort of a tipping point or a cliffhanger with one character, and you're turning the page to see how it turns out, and then you're transported into a different perspective, and it's a great read.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And then another writer who meant a lot to me is Hedef Suwayf. She's an Egyptian writer. And her novel, In the Eye of the Sun, I read it when I first started to write. It was published in 1992. And it tells us the story. It's a big novel. And it's about this young woman, very modern, very, you know, upper middle class. She's coming to England to study for a PhD. So this was quite a breakthrough novel for me because I had never read a novel by... at that point, I had never read a novel by an African writer that was so cosmopolitan, that was so relatable. At that time... most of the writing was about village life, let's say, or very conservative lifestyles. But her novel, the characters are very westernized, and I found that very fascinating. Like for the first time, I could relate to this. The combination of East and West and the Arab concerns and the Western concerns and the theme of the foreign student in Britain, that was also a theme that interests me. Yeah, so that was, this is another of my favorite books, in the Eye of the Sun by Hedef Suwayf.
Yeah. That's a great trio.
Yes.
I think maybe many listeners will have heard of Mahfouz and Saleh, but what are the? Do you have any examples of Arabic writers writing today that we should discover or keep an eye out for?
Well, Fatin Abbas is a Sudanese writer, and she's written one novel. Her first novel came out, and it's called Ghost Season, and that's a very interesting novel because it's set between North and South Sudan, and it deals with very much the current themes of the conflict in Sudan and the racism between North and South, and so it's a very topical subject. I'm also I admire a great deal Isabella Hamad. Isabella Hamad is a Palestinian writer, and her first novel is called The Parisian, and her new novel is called Enter Ghost. And it's about these young people in Palestine, in the West Bank, who are staging Hamlet as a play, and the main character is one of the actresses in the play, and so by watching them perform and going through the process with them, we learn a lot about the life of the Palestinians at the moment. Yeah.
I think you have a wonderful list.
Thank you.
Do you have anyone else you feel are left out?
There's lots of wonderful writers. There's a magazine called Brittle Paper. It's published online. And that is very good for, it keeps up to date with African writing and all the news about African writers. So I always recommend it, because it's so up to date, and it always carries news and reviews of the latest African books, and they always publish, lists of African books to look forward to.
Yeah, that's true. It's a great resource.
Yeah, it's a great resource.
Brittle Paper.
Yes.
Yeah. Leila, thank you for coming to my African Reading List.
You're welcome. Thank you.